Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Bet Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Av uvno, shru et achodesh, a father and son who witness the new moon, yelchu, they should go up to Beit Din to testify about this. Lo shimitztarfim zeim ze, not because they can be edim together, because they are relatives and therefore pasul eidut, hela shem emi pasel, echad mehen yitztaref hasheni imacher. If one of them is found to be problematic, not because they didn't see it, obviously they witnessed it, but for whatever reason they're caught in their explanation and therefore they are deemed invalid as an aid, then the other party can now join together with someone else that's there. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Avubno, V'chol Agrovim, K'sherim Le'edut HaChodesh. Rabbi Shimon says that Eidut HaChodesh is different than any other testifying or testimony, where Grovim, where relatives are psulim. Within the Rishonim, there are different reasons given for why a Karov is Pasul. Some believe it's just a Gzerat HaKatuv. Doesn't matter how ne'eman, how believable you are. The Gzerat HaKatuv is that you may not have relatives that testify. Others believe that it's a problem because if relatives testify, even though there are instances where they wouldn't do this, but in general we would be suspect a certain amount of collusion, favoritism, nepotism that would happen through the Eidim, and therefore we disqualify them. Rabbi Shimon says that Eidut HaChodesh is an exception to that, and he'll explain why. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Maseh B'Tovia HaRofe, there was an incident with Tovia the doctor, Shira'at HaChodesh B'Yerushalayim, he witnessed the new moon, who, Ubno V'Avdo HaMishuchrar, he, his son, and his Eved HaKnani that had been freed, V'Kiblu HaKohanim Oto V'Et Bino, the Kohanim who were accepting the testimony accepted him and his son, U'Paslu Et Avdo, and they disqualified his Eved. Kshubal lifnei Beit Din, once they reached Beit Din, kiblu oto v'et avdo, they accepted him and his Eved, upaslu et bino, and they disqualified his son. So the difference here between the Kohanim and the Beit Din was that Beit Din believes that relatives are disqualified, whereas Avadim are ksherim. The Kohanim believed that Avadim were problematic, and relatives were qualified. They think relatives are qualified like Rabbi Shimon, and they also interpret the need for Eidut by Eidut HaChodesh to say that only Kamochem, Miuchasim Kamochem, only people who come from lineage that is Miuchas, which would disqualify Gerim, Amzerim, and Avadim. Whereas the Beit Din says that relatives are disqualified, but you don't need Miuchasim. So Amar Rabbi Levi, my time at Rabbi Shimon. What's the reason behind Rabbi Shimon's opinion that relatives are not disqualified here by Eidut HaChodesh? Tichtiv, because the Pasuk says, by HaChodesh Ezelechem, by Yom HaShem El Moshe Vel Aharon, Beretz Mitzrayim Lemor. Shem appears to Moshe Vel Aharon to tell them about the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, and it says, HaChodesh Ezelechem, that this is the way that you're going to be Mekadesh the Chodesh. Eidut Zu Tehei Kishei Rabachem. The fact that Hashem approached Moshe Vel Aharon, and gives him the description of the process of Kiddush HaChodesh, he's also giving a stamp of approval that Moshe and Aaron will also be qualified to give Eidut, despite the fact that they are brothers. V'Rabbanon, what do the Rabbanon do with that statement of Rabbi Shimon? Eidut zut ei misura lechem, that the limud is the same limud, but it has to do with not the testimony, but the receipt of testimony, which means that Beit Din is in control of when setting the Moadim and the Chodoshim. So what it means is Moshe Aaron, people like you, heads of the people, the Beit Din, they'll be the ones who determine or qualify when Rosh Chodesh is and when Yom Tov is, when the Moadim turn out. But on the other hand, this doesn't qualify you to be Edim. It's not a description of the qualifications for Edim. It's a description of the qualifications for those that are determining the Moadim and the Rosh Chodeshim. Whereas Rabbi Shimon sees this as a stamp of approval for relatives, because Moshe and Aaron are now told to go ahead and be Mekadesh the Chodesh as if they are Edim. Amar Rabbi Yossi Maseh B'Tovia HaRofe. Amar Rav Chanan Bar Rava Hilchata Rabbi Shimon. The law is like Rabbi Shimon that relatives are qualified. Amar Le Rav Huna the Rav Chanan Bar Rava. So Rav Huna says to Rav Chanan Bar Rava, Rabbi Yossi Umaseh. First of all, you have Rabbi Yossi arguing Rabbi Shimon, and generally we would paskin like Rabbi Yossi. In addition to that, we have case law that is brought in the Mishnah that supports the position of Rabbi Yossi and not the position of Rabbi Shimon. Vat amar tehilchatog Rabbi Shimon? And you're saying the law is like Rabbi Shimon? That seems to go against our principles of psak. Amarlo, vaz zimnin sagin amarit kamei derav. Many times I said before Rav that hilchatog Rabbi Shimon. Velo amar li velo mide, and he didn't respond to me as if he was acquiescing to the fact that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. So Rav Huna is also a Talmid of Rav. He's asking Rav Chanan bar Abba why he's passing like Rabbi Shimon when the normal principles of Psak would go against that Psak. And he says, because I said it over in front of Rav many times, and Rav did not object. So I'm like, hey, Chaitanita. Wait, exactly how did you quote your Mishnah? I'm like, Ipcha. It's the opposite of the way that we have it printed in our Mishnah. That Rabbi Shimon was the author of the position that relatives are disqualified, and Rabbi Yossi was the author of the position that relatives are qualified. So therefore, when he said Hilchot Rabbi Shimon, it's the equivalent of saying Hilchot Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah. So then he says, oh, if that's the case, that's why he didn't respond to you, because you quoted Rabbi Shimon's opinion as disqualifying relatives. And since that's the case, he agreed with that. That's, he thinks Allah is that way, and that's why he said Hilchot Rabbi Shimon did not object. Amar Tavi Brei Demari Tavi, Amar Marukva Amar Shmuel. So now we have a Mesorah from Shmuel, not from Rav. Hilchot Rabbi Shimon. The Lacha is like Rabbi Shimon. And you can see on the side here that there's an alternative Girsa, which is Ein Hilchot Rabbi Shimon. This is probably premised on the fact of which Girsa you're looking at. If you're looking at the Girsa of our Mishnah, then probably it is Ein Hilchot Rabbi Shimon. If you're looking at the Girsa that Rav Chanan bar Rava had, then the likelihood is that it is Hilchot Rabbi Shimon. The assumption being here that Shmuel is paskening the same way that Rav did, which is that relatives are disqualified for Edut HaChodesh. The next Mishnah. Eluhen Apsulim. These are individuals who are disqualified from giving testimony with regards to Edut HaChodesh. Hamesachek Bikubia. Someone who plays with dice. Here it's some sort of form of gambling. Umalvei Beribit. People who lend with interest. Umafrichei Yonim. Which the Gemara and Sanhedrin has different interpretations of what that means. But it likely means that they race pigeons. V'sochare shvi'it. And coming up next year, this will be a big issue. People who engage in commerce with regards to perot shvi'it. V'avadim. And slaves. Zakala. This is the principle. Kol edut she'ene ishak sherala. Avhein einan ksherim la. For avadim and any of the other disqualified parties that are mentioned in our Mishnah, here's the principle that you need to know. Anytime that a woman cannot testify, so too an eved cannot testify. Eved Kanani has the same status as a woman with regards to mitzvot. It's not an equation that a woman is an Eved Kanani, just a way to say what the halachic requirements, obligations of an Eved Kanani are. They are those of a woman. Just like the woman is freed from time-bound mitzvot because she's not in control of her time, either because of her husband or because of her need to tend to the children, so do an Eved does not have control over his time. And therefore he gets the same exemptions. So therefore, a Chazal look for a paradigm of who to pattern the Eved Kanani after. They go to a woman who has a similar structure of mitzvot. And again, it's not an equation that Eved Kanani equals Isha. In terms of those that are disqualified in the Mishnah, as Rashi points out, Tosafot also spends time on this, all these people that are disqualified in the Mishnah are because they violated an Isur Dirabanan, a rabbinic injunction, or the way Rashi describes it here, even if they violated a Din D'Oraita, they don't think of themselves as being in the wrong. Because if they are doing an isur lav min haTorah, or they violate sitting mid oraita, then there's a lav in the Torah to make them into edim or use their testimony, which is al tashet yadcha imed chamas. So you're not allowed to take any aid that is violated in isur d'oraita. So here we're talking about violations of isurei d'rabanan, or as Rashi describes here, violations of isurei d'oraita, where it doesn't feel like they're doing something wrong. Let's start with Misachek Bekubia. Misachek Bekubia, the Gemara in Sanhedrin gives two explanations as to what the problem is. One problem is that in osukim b'yishuvo shel olam, they're not involved in productive types of work. Their livelihood is made from gambling. That gambling is fine, they're making a livelihood from it, but it doesn't add anything to the world, it's not productive in any way, and that's why they're disqualified, because they don't understand what it means to toil and to work and to be creative and building, and therefore they're more likely to lie or not worry about lying in testimony because they don't have that sense of what it means to build, to destroy, or to affect someone else's life. The other possibility is that gambling is problematic because of asmachta lo kanyo. The fact that that type of kinyan does not work. The person who is betting and putting in the money towards the betting doesn't really believe they're going to lose the money. And therefore, they don't give over a kinyan gemur. It's called an asmachta. Now, if you do believe asmachta lokanya, then you're actually stealing. But as Rashi points out, that a gazlan or gezel midoraita is only when you actively go and take the object away from them. That the Gemara proves in Bava Kamma that a gazlan is only someone who literally goes and swipes something from someone in front of their face and takes it from them. That's called a gazlan. Other people are ganavim or types of gazlanim, but in a more subverted way. And as Rashi points out over here, so even though they are gazlanim, possibly even midoraita, they're in violation with the smakta lukanya, but because they're matir themselves, they think that's not really stealing. And so they don't think of it as being a thief, so therefore they won't conduct the rest of their lives as being thieves, because they don't see this as stealing, so we don't worry about them then not being trustworthy with other areas. So that's mesachek bikubya. Malvei biribit. Those people that lend with interest. Now again, if they lend with interest midoraita, they might be in violation of misa doraita, and that would disqualify them automatically. Here we're talking about malvei ribit, either derabanan, which is a possibility where it's not ribit ketuta, it's not fixed interest, it's not certain that he will receive the interest. It's interest that comes about from a certain transactional nature that's described in the Gemara and Baba Metzia, or we know that the person who's giving them the interest is not doing it unwillingly, they're doing it willingly. They went into this agreement, and they're paying the interest willingly. So it's not real gazlanut, it's not real theft. So they're not disqualified midoraita, they're only disqualified midorabanan, similar to the mesachek bekubya, where it's not real stealing, because they think, or they're matir themselves to do it, because they don't think it's really stealing. So therefore the isur or the disqualification is only midorabanan, not midoraita. Mafriche yonim is the same as mesachek bekubya. It's similar type of gambling issue. Sochare shvi'it, which is an isur doraita to transact in payroll shvi'it. So there you would be, again, isur doraita would disqualify you dioraita. So Tosafot gives two reasons that it's possibly only derabanan here. Either it's shvi'it bizman hazeh, which would make it only an isur derabanan, because shvi'it bizman hazeh, according to Rabbi, is only derabanan. Or inari bischora derabanan. It's only a type of commerce that's considered to be problematic, mid derabanan. And Tosafot goes describing what exactly is called schora. Tosafot here and in Avodah Zarah defines chorei shvi'it possibly as only being when you're doing on a commercial quantities and to make profit. You're trying to buy lower and sell higher. That's called schora, and that's disqualified. He even entertains the possibility that someone who picks or takes fruits of shvi'it and then they have excess that they're allowed to sell those off, because that's not called schora. That's not called commercial transacting in these items. So he says if it's schora midorabanan, it doesn't qualify to be schora midoraita, but midrabanan, it would still be classified as a transactional nature with the fruits. We know that the din is with regard to perot shvi'it, lo'achla v'lo l'schora. You're not allowed to transact in perot shvi'it. So here in isur d'rabanan again, we disqualify them. Now, as Rashi points out in all these individuals, since they're chomeid mamon, they love to make money and to collect money, and they're willing to do it not in the straightest manner. They're doing it in a either backhanded way or basically cheating other people, even though they don't see it as being stealing, they're still doing it in a manner that is not correct. We worry about the fact that they might also be convinced to testify falsely, because they could be paid, they could be bribed to do things, they might testify because there's a monetary impact on that, and we see that money impacts their feelings and their morals. So we're worried about the moral standing of these individuals because they're willing to trade their morals for money, and we'll worry the same thing with regards to testimony. Now the Gemara says, based on our Mishnah, isha ksherala, you can be midayik from a Mishnah that if a woman can testify, then afein ksherim la. All these items are all the people that are mentioned in our Mishnah are also ksherim. So avadim would make sense if an isha kshera, so is an evid. But the remainder of the individuals that are in our Mishnah, they are disqualified midrabanan. But what the Gemara is saying here is, if there is permission for Eid Echad to testify, which means it's not real Eidut, it's not real testimony, but it has to do with the Nemanut, the believability of the individual, then Eid Echad should Neman be Surim. One Eid that can testify, the guy be Isur, when Isha can also testify. Or, if a husband that passed away and we're not certain about it, and you have a woman who is an Aguna, and we have one witness that tells us the husband passed away, we believe them. So in all these cases, those individuals would qualify and would be believed. Amar Ravashi, Zotomeret. This tells us, or the conclusion we would draw from this is, Gazlan de Divrehem Ksherim Le'edut Isha. That people are only Gazlanim Midrabanan, qualified to give the Edut of Isha, or basically the equivalent of when Eid Echad or Isha is qualified. In those cases like Isurim, and in those cases where it involves Aguna, where the Chachamim gave special dispensations for one Eid to make a difference, these individuals who are only Gazlanim Midrabanan are qualified as well. Now that's despite the fact that they can be convinced or bribed to do something. Over there, in those cases, the real thing that's at stake is the nemanut, the believability of the individual. And over there, we assume that the person's going to tell the truth when there's no monetary incentive for them not to tell the truth. So we assume that they're going to tell the truth just because most people will tell the truth unless challenged otherwise. So they're challenged when there's money involved, or they're challenged when they can be bribed. Pravir by Ener Hanemen by Surim, or by a woman who wants to know, a guna wants to know about her husband, over there's not usually a monetary issue involved, and therefore their nemanut is still there, and they don't lose their nemanut because these are only gazlanim midivrehim. Obviously, if there were gazlanim midoraita, that would take on a very different meaning. Okay, now the next Mishnah. Mi sharat chodesh venu yochol alech. Person who sees the new moon but is unable to walk themselves up to Beit Din. They're too old. For some reason, they're incapable of getting there. Molichino tala chamor. You can put him onto an animal and take him. Afilu b'mitar. You can carry him in his bed. If there are dangers in traveling that route, then you can. Kim b'yadam maklot. They can take staves or sticks with them in order to protect themselves. They can take weapons in order to protect themselves. If it's a long journey, you can take with yourself provisions for the way because you're going to take a long time to get there. For the distance of up to one night and a day, you're Mechalel Shabbat. And basically, you're only allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat if your testimony can make a difference. So if you saw it on the night or the Friday night and you can go to Beit Din and make it there before Shabbat is over, we allow you to be Mechalel Shabbat in order to do it. But if you're going to get there after, it's going to be relevant anyway, then we don't allow you to go up and testify because you're being Mechalel Shabbat with no benefit from that Chilul Shabbat. And therefore, Al-Malech Lala V'yom Mechalin Et HaShabbat V'yotzim Le'idut HaChodesh Shenemar Eile Moadei Hashem Asher Tigru Otam B'Moadam. That these are the holidays of Hashem that need to be called in their time, and therefore there's a grant or dispensation given to Tikro Otam B'Moadam that you should do them at the right time. There is a tzivoy that allows you to be Mechalel Shabbat. In addition to that, we're going to see in the next parak, and Tosafot points this out, that not only can the Edim themselves, who are coming up to testify about what they saw, but also people who come to verify their character and say that these people are good Edim, they can also be Mechalel Shabbat in order to allow the Edim who saw the moon to testify and be believed. So not only can the Edim themselves can go up, but Edim about the status or standing of these Edim can also go up to Beit Din. Okay, with that, we complete the first parak. And now we move into the second parak with Edut HaChodesh in full force with regards to how Beit Din interacts with the Edim. Im eino makirim oto, if they don't recognize the Eid, they don't know him, he doesn't have a standing with the court. Mashachim imo acher lahaido. We send along someone with him that the court recognizes and knows in order to say that this individual is considered to be a qualified individual. Birushanaya mikablim Edut HaChodesh mikol adam. Originally, they used to accept Edut HaChodesh from anybody. Once the Baitusim and Tzdugim started to cause problems because they wanted Rosh Chodesh Nisan to fall out on a Shabbat, so therefore Pesach would be on Shabbat, and Mimacharat HaShabbat would be Sunday, so they used to start playing around with the Edut, and they used to play around with the signals that were sent. We'll see in the upcoming Mishnayot. They then put a Takana in place that they'd only accept testimony from people who were qualified or known not to be problematic with regards to these issues. So the Gemara over here asks, my acher, who is this other individual who they're sending along? Chad. That sounds like one individual they send along to testify about the standing of the Edim or the aid that is giving testimony about the Chodesh. Where it says, V'chad mi mehemin? Since when is one witness believed? V'atanyo. Don't we have a breita? Maseh shebah hu ve'edav imo. There's an individual who came with his Edim with him, the Ha'id Alav, to testify about him, to qualify him. So you see that you need Shnei Edim to qualify the witness. And then the witness themselves has to then testify about the Edut HaChodesh. You need two witnesses for that as well. Samra Papa, my Acher. What does Acher mean? Zug Acher, another pair. Sachinami Mistavra, that makes a lot of sense in the context of the Mishnah. Dilo Teima Och, if you don't say this, Imena Makirim Oto, if Beit Din doesn't recognize the witness, my Oto, what does it mean, him? If you say they don't recognize him, meaning one witness, then what's that going to do for you? Since one is one person believed, mishpat ketiv bay, regards to the Edut HaChodesh, which is written with regards to Rosh Hashanah, which is mishpat Elokei Yaakov, in the psukim of Tikku B'Chodesh Shofar, so it's like a mishpat, it's like a regular din that requires two edim. So elamai oto, so then the Mishnah, what's the meaning of the word oto? Oto azug, it means that pair of witnesses that comes up to the Beit Din, they don't recognize or they don't know these witnesses. Hachanami may acher, what does it mean, the others? It means zug acher. Another pair of witnesses goes up and testifies to the standing or the truthfulness of these Edim. The Gemara says, V'chad lo mehemen. Is that really true that one person is not believed? V'atanya, ma'aseh b'Rebbe Nohorai, shalach etzel ha'ed, la'id alav b'Shabbat b'Usha. There was this individual who was going up to testify that he had seen the moon, and Rabbi Nohai was the character witness. And he went up with him. So that's Rabbi Nohai, who's a single witness, going to be the character witness for this individual in Usha. And he went on Shabbat. So Amrei Rabbi Nohai, Sadach Rina Hava Badei. The truth is, the story is that Rabbi Nohai had another witness with him. So then why doesn't the Brayta mention it? Mishum Kvodo Shel Rabbi Nohai. Because Rabbi Nohai was a significant individual, so they just mention him. But of course, there was somebody else that went with him, so that other person wasn't so significant. Ravashi Amar, Rabbi Nohai, Sada Achrina Hava Beusha. There was another character witness in Usha. Vaza Rabbi Nohai, that's Tufei Badei. Rabbi Nohai was going knowing that there was another witness there, and he was going to be Mitzterev, joined together to be two witnesses, to be the character witnesses here. Where it says, Yochi Maida Memra. So then what's the chiddush here? Of course he can go up. He knows he's going to be mitzvah with someone else. Why is there any question? So ma'u detema misveka lo mechalalin shabta. Because of a safek, we're not michalel Shabbat, because we're not certain that the other individual is going to be there. The individual who knows him in the city or in Usha, maybe when we get there, we'll find out that he's not there. And if he's not there, then the point of being michalel Shabbat Rabbi Nohai would be worthless. So we say, no, we assume that he will be there, and we'll assume that he will make a difference, and therefore he can be michalel Shabbat misafek, in order to give the character testimony for this individual along with the other person that's found in Usha. That's the Kamash Malan. Kiata Ula, Amar Kichuli Yarcha Bimarova. When Ula came to Bavel, he said in Marova, in Eretz Yisrael, they were Mekadesh, the Chodesh, it was a Chaser. Amar Rav Kahana, Lomi Bayu Ula, the Gavar Rabuhu, the Mehemet. Not only Ula, who is a great individual and comes with a certain amount of stature and believability, mean that we will take his word as being true, not only a person like Ula, Ela afilu inish da'alma nami mehemet. Even regular individuals, lay people, would be believed. My taima, what's the reason here? Because they're not really testifying. Because kol milto davida liglulei mushakrei ba'inche. Anything that eventually be clarified, I mean, this is something that eventually will be known, whether he was lying or not lying, people won't lie. So over here, if he's going to lie about which day Beit Din made the Chodesh, eventually other people are going to come from Eretz Yisrael and either verify what he said or contradict what he said. So people aren't going to lie when they know they're going to be caught in their lie. So that's why there's believability over here, because there's no reason or there's no ability for people to lie because they'll be caught in their lie. So therefore, anybody is believed. So Tanya Nami Yochel, we have a bright that supports this, but by Echad Misofa Olam, someone comes from wherever, we don't know who they are. If he says Beitin was Mekadesh HaChodesh, he is believed. We give him a certain amount of Nemanut because of the fact that he's just being Megale Milta, as it's called. He's not really testifying. He's what's called Megale Milta. He is just giving us information that we're going to get anyway. So he just accelerates that process of giving us the information. And since it's not Edut, we don't require two individuals, one individual, and even a layperson is believed in this case, because it's simply a Giloi Milta. And this might help explain this story with Levi earlier on in the Gemara, where Levi came to Bavel, and they asked him to testify. Over there, it says that he wasn't willing to testify because he hadn't heard it from Beit Din. But it makes it sound like in the Gemara that had he testified, they would have kept that day, but he's a one witness. So this Gemara answers that question, because one witness is not a real witness. They are just Megala Milta. They are just simply giving us information that will eventually come to us. They're accelerating that process, and they're just giving us the information of the Beit Din. So, in essence, a person is the extension of the Beit Din. He is almost like the shliach of the Beit Din, or the public messenger or public announcer of what the Beit Din did, just giving voice to what they did, but he's not really an aid, he's not testifying, and therefore it would have been permitted. Now, Levi demurred in that case because he hadn't heard it straight from the Beit Din. Because the Chachamim put in place a takana that you have to hear it directly from the Beit Din, then at that point he was no longer acting as a Megala Milta, because he's missing one of the qualifications of the Beit Din, and therefore he would become an aid. And as an aid echad, he could not testify because he can't function without two aidim. So if he's just simply Megala Milta, then it works. If he's an aid, it doesn't work. So in the case over here, we say that it works because maybe these are the months, not Nisan, not Tishrei, and he's simply Megala Milta. Or they heard it directly from Beit Din, and now they're just being Megala Milta. Levi over there, who would have been Megala Milta, except for the fact that he didn't hear it directly from Beit Din. Since he didn't hear it directly from Beit Din, now he's either has to testify like an aide, which he can't do because he's a single aide, or he can't function as a Shlech Beit Din because Beit Din took away that power because he hadn't seen it directly or hadn't heard directly from Beit Din the words Mikudash. Birishona, ayumikablim eduta chodesh mikol adam. Tanrabanan, ma kilkul kukulu abaitusim. What was it that the baitusim did that caused the problem? Pamachad bikshu baitusim latot et hachamim. They wanted to ruin it for the chachamim or make it come out that Rosh Chodesh would be on Shabbat. Therefore, Pesach would fall out Shabbat and Macharat HaShabbat would be Sunday. Zachru shnei bnei adam bedalei meo zuz. They hired two mercenary witnesses, but 400 zuz. Echad mishalanu v'echad mishalem. One of ours and one of theirs. Ours being those from the Prushim that support the position of the Chachamim. One of theirs being someone who was a Tztuki or a Baitosi. Shalahem heid eduto v'yatza. Their witness went first. The Tztuki or Baitosi that was hired went in, testified, and left. Shalanu amru lo emur kitzarit et alivana. So our witness, the plant, came in, and the Beit Din says to him, what did you see in the sky? What moon did you see? Amalehem. Ola haiti b'male adumim. I was going up by male adumim. So he was looking over the Judean desert. Veritiv. And I saw the moon. Shu ravut ben bet slaim. It was sitting between two rocks. Rosho dome le'egel. Its head was like a calf. Aznav domim le'gdi. Its ears were like that of a goat or a kid. Karnav domot le'tzvi. Its horns were like that of a deer. V'zanvo munechet lo ben yerchotav, and its tail was between its legs. V'tzatzti bo, and I caught a glimpse of it. V'nirtati, and I was shocked by what I saw. Nafalti l'achorai, and I fell back. V'imein atem ma'aminim li, if you don't believe me, hari matayim zuz turim li b'sadinai. There are 200 zuz in my pocket, in my wallet, that I'm telling the truth. Amrulo, they understood the hint that he was saying, that he was basically hired to come in and testify. Amrulo, mi his kikacha l'kach, who put you to this task? Amar lehem shemati shebikshu baitusim latot et hachamim. I heard the word going around that the baitusim wanted to cause the chachamim problems. Amarti elech ani v'odi lehem. I'll go and be the one who they hire and tell the chachamim shema yavo bnei adam shenem huganim, because they might find people that are not so upstanding who would accept the bribe and go up and testify. V'yitu et hachamim, and they really would cause a problem. So amru lo matayim zuz netunim lecha b'matana. First of all, the 200 zuz that you got, you can keep, even though they're not yours, and you didn't do what they asked you to do to testify falsely, so you didn't carry out the job that you were paid for. Nevertheless, you can keep the money. As Rashi says, they invoke here, hefker beit din hefker. So you can keep the money, and v'sochachai matach al amud, and whoever hired you will be put on the pillar or the post, which is a euphemism for malkot. He'll be whipped for doing this. And from that point forward, which is described in our Mishnah, they only accept testimony from people who were qualified witnesses or had character witnesses came along and made sure that we knew who they were. Alright, next Mishnah. Barishuna yu masim masot. In the beginning, they used to make big pyres or fires in order to pass along whether it was Rosh Chodesh. Mishikilgalu akutim. Once the kutim started to cause problems with that, itkinu sheish luchim yotzim. Then they started to send out messengers. Kate said, hayu masim masot. Originally, what was the original practice that they had? Mevi'in pluna sochel eres. They used to bring big boards of cedar, arukim, very long, vikanim. And then they used to bring more brambles, vatsay shemen, and wood of the shemen tree, v'ne oret shel pishtan, and the leftovers of the flax. And all of these items are very flammable. Korchan b'mishicha, and then they tie them with a mishicha string. V'ola l'rosh ha'har, and then he goes up to the top of the mountain. U'metzit ben et ha'or, he lights the flammable items that he ties to the top of the big cedar board. U'malich u'mevi u'male morid. Then he moves it back and forth and up and down. Until he sees his friend doing this on the next mountain, meaning that they had preset this, that they would be on the certain high points of the mountains that are going out towards Bavel from Eretz Yisrael, and they set this up beforehand. So on those nights that they were expecting it, they used to go up there. So if the first individual started the fire and lit things, then the next person would follow and signal him back that he received the signal and then pass it on to the next individual. Now the Yerushalmi says the reason they went up and down and side to side is to make sure that they didn't get confused with a shooting star or a moving star. They made it in a motion that would clearly be something that was man-made. V'chein b'rosh ha'ar shlishi. And then they continue to do this mountain by mountain. M'ayin ayu masin masot. From where did they start? What was the trajectory of the mountaintops that they used? They start Mahara Mishcha. Har Mishcha means Har HaZeitim in Yerushalayim. And then they used to go out to Lesartava. Umi Sartava the Grofina, Umi Grofina the Chavran, Umi Chavran the Beit Baltin. Umi Beit Baltin, which was a mountain that overlooked the eastern parts towards Babel, They didn't leave there. Until he saw the entire Gola lit up in fire. The Gemara discussed where that is, but it seems to be that was Pumpadita, one of the major cities in Babel. And once it was there, they saw that they were responding from there, and then they spread the message from Pumpadita to the other places in Babel. As far as the identity of these mountains, there is a machloket. Sartava is probably found somewhere in the Shomron, slightly west of the banks of the Jordan. Many people identified it with a place called Odem, that if you're going up the Derech HaBikah, you can see it's a very, very high point on your way up there, that you can see from there all the way out to the east, as well as further north. The next one, which is Grofina, is assumed to be a mountain towards the lower eastern Galil, and then Chavron is assumed to be a mountain on the eastern bank of the Jordan, somewhere in Syria. And then Beit Blatin is assumed to be a mountain that is on the far edges of the eastern border of Eretz Yisrael that overlooks eastward towards the area of Babel. Gemara says, "My mashna de masin lishna di yukoldhu." How do you know the word masin means like a lashon of fire or burning? Dichtiv, because it says by David HaMelech, by Yisaim David v'anashav, that David HaMelech and his troops took them, umitargaminon, and the translation, the Aramaic translation of that is ogdinan David, that they lit them on fire, they torched them. So we see that the word Vayisaim is translated from Hebrew, which the Mishnah is written in, into the Aramaic, Ogdinan, which means to torch, to light on fire. Tarabanan, in masin masot, el alachode shinire bizmano de kadusho. First of all, when they originally used these fire signals, they only used the signal if Rosh Chodesh was on the 30th day, meaning that it was a chaser month beforehand. Veimatai masin, and when do they put the fires on? The or iburo. They put it on the night of the 30th, going into the 31st. So if Rosh Chodesh was that day, after that day of Rosh Chodesh, that next night, after the first of the next month, they used to light the fires on that night to signal that the previous day had been Rosh Chodesh, that the previous day was Rosh Chodesh and the previous month was Chaser, the Memra. So from this you would conclude, a Chaser Avdina and a Malay Lo Avdina. We only send these signals out when the month is 29 days. And not when it's a 30-day month, the prior month. My time, huh? Because the problem, if Rosh Chodesh Chaser, you have a 29-day month that falls out on Erev Shabbat. So now, when are you going to set the fires to signal to them? So after Shabbat or Motzei Shabbat, if you signaled both for when it was a Chaser and it was a Malay, if you went to signal on Motzei Shabbat, they would think it was a Malay month, even though it's really a Chaser month. And on Friday night, they couldn't put up the fires, because we saw before, you're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat to be Koveya the Chodesh, you're not allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat in order to convey the information that the Chodesh was Nikva. So you can't be Mechalel Shabbat Friday night to light the fires. If that's the case, then the signal will go out Motzei Shabbat, and they wouldn't know the right day. They'd actually think it was a 30-day month, not a 29-day month. Diamar Navid Nami Amalei. Because if you say you should also do it when the month is 30 days, they're going to have a mistake. That it really is a chaser. Why did they do it on Friday night? Because they couldn't do it. Maybe it is a Malay month. And they did it at the right time. So if the signal came out on the Motzei Shabbat, which would be signaling that it's a 30-day month, you wouldn't know what it meant when it was on Motzei Shabbat. Gemara says, V'aved ben Malay ben chaser. So do it both when it's a Malay and a Chaser, v'chimagla Rosh Chodesh b'Erev Shabbat, and when it turns out Erev Shabbat, lo le'avid klal, don't do it at all. Meaning that if it's a Chaser month, you don't do it at all. If it's a Malay month, you'll do it on Motzei Shabbat. And then they'll know that's the signal. Came into Avdin and Motzei Shabbat, v'Avdin and Amalei. Since we normally would do it on a Malay on Motzei Shabbat, and they didn't do it, that will signal that it is a Chaser. Midayode, the Chaser, then they would know that the previous month was 29 days, and the previous day was Rosh Chodesh. Where it says, even with that, they're going to make a mistake. Amrei, hi Malehu, it was really a 30-day month. Why didn't they do it on Motzei Shabbat when it was a full month? Something happened and they couldn't put it together to get it going. So they really meant to do it on Motzei Shabbat to signal that was a Malay. And the reason they didn't do it was because whatever happened on Shabbat, whatever problems came up, they couldn't do it. So because of that, they say, okay, we're not going to do it both on a Malay and a Chaser, and then do it not at all when it falls out on Erev Shabbat, because people might come to the wrong conclusion on Motzei Shabbat when they don't see it. Instead of taking that as a signal that it's a Chaser, they might take that as being, oh, the reason is because something happened that didn't allow them to do it right on Motzei Shabbat. Now, when they do it every time on one night, people don't suspect that they had a mistake. When they do it sometimes this night and sometimes that night, people will assume that there's a mistake. And that's the difference between what we said before. In the case of Erev Shabbat, when they don't do it or they were absent in some way, people won't think that's a mistake because they always do it this way. But in our case, when you're saying you light both for a Malay and a Chaser, then it's not always on that night. It's sometimes the night before, sometimes this night. There, people might attribute the lack of light or the lack of fire to a mistake. Rashi says, "V'lavid amalei v'lavid achaser." Why don't we do it on a Malay month and not on a Chaser month? And as Tosfot points out before, you could have said the same thing with a Malay that chaliot b'Shabbat. If you have a Malay month that falls out on Shabbat, you're going to have the same problem if you do it on Malay and not on a Chaser. So why don't we do it on Malay and not on a Chaser? And again, the problem is the same. Do you have Shabbat be a problem for the Malay just like the Chaser? Just like we dealt with it by the Chaser, we can deal with it by the Malay. So why did the Chachamim opt to do the earlier? Only signal when there's a Chaser and not signal when there's a Malay. Because it saves the people from not doing work for 2 days. Rashi, this claims this has to do with Rosh Hashanah. That if Rosh Hashanah was really on the first day, if they signaled on Motzei Rosh Hashanah, then people would know they don't have to keep a second day of Rosh Hashanah, and they wouldn't be mevatel from their melacha, because we don't want to take away people from their ability to work. It's difficult enough without that, and so we want to give them the opportunity. We won't have to have an Easter melacha for 2 days, misafek. So because of that, they would send it the signal right after the first day to tell you the chaser, not the malay. If you only signaled for the malay, they wouldn't know the information until after the second day, and they'd always have to keep 2 days of Easter melacha. Tosafot says this applies not only to Rosh Hashanah, but even to Rosh Chodesh. Because we know that their practice on Rosh Chodesh was to desist from Malacha on those days. Tosafot quotes the Gemara Megillah, which we'll see, which is why are there 4 aliyot on Rosh Chodesh? Because it's not Mevatel the Amim Malacha. Because people don't normally go to work on that day anyway, so they can spend a little more time in Shul with 4 aliyot. So based on that, Tosafot says this equally applies to all Rosh Chodesh. And they'd rather signal that it's a one-day Rosh Chodesh than have the people wait 2 days to only find out it was a one-day Rosh Chodesh. So better to signal the chaser, because then there will be times where they'll only have to keep 1 day of Rosh Hashanah, and times they'll have to keep 1 day of Rosh Chodesh. If you only signal them for Malay, they will always have to keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, always keep 2 days of Rosh Chodesh, until they get the information to know otherwise. So better to signal for the chaser and give them the opportunity sometimes to have 1 day of Yom Tov or 1 day of Rosh Chodesh, so that they can work on the second day and not be mevatel them from Malacha. Okay, we'll stop over here.